Welcome back to the Wild Orgasmic Wisdom podcast, where we explore the unified field of ecstatic genius underlying our everyday realities. I'm your host and quantum priestess, Kimberly Baudet. And my guest today is a sexologist and a sex coach who runs her own sexuality education company, Velvet Lips. She's also a co-founder of the Sex Down South Conference and the Sexual Liberation Collective. She has studied human sexuality for more than 19 years and educated over 20,000 people, given over 400 workshops, and has served over 100 clients in her private practice all around the world. She recently co-authored her first book, The Ultimate Guide to Seduction and Foreplay, and I'm so pleased to introduce to you Marla Stewart. Welcome, Marla.
Hi, thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Fantastic. Yeah, it's a pleasure to have you here. Yes. So for those folks who don't know you, can you tell us a little bit about yourself, your personal journey, and how you got started on the path to being a sex educator?
Of course, of course. So I would say it all began. Well, it's kind of an interesting story. I grew up with a very sex positive parent. She probably didn't realize she was being sex positive, but she just was definitely did not want me to become a teenage mother like she was. So she was very much educating me as a young child. But as I got to college, I actually, my real passion was in acting and singing. And so I was doing that. And then also I was studying human sexuality as well. And then I got a psychology scholarship. So I kind of transitioned to psychology. And at the same time, all of my friends were just not having orgasms, and I was having lots of orgasms. And so I was just like, wait, what? Like, why aren't you having orgasms? And so I really just made it my pretty much my mission in life to help women have better orgasms. And just to have people have better sex lives in general. So yeah, I've been studying this subject for a long time. So after college in California, I came to Atlanta for grad school, where I got my master's in sociology, studying gender and sexuality, studied women's and gender studies. While in grad school, I was also studying HIV and public health. So there was a lot of interdisciplinary aspects to what I was doing. And a lot of my work was surrounded by mental health and sexual health and correlation between those two. So, you know, when I got to grad school, my best friend was just like, hey, you just need to start your business now. Because, you know, by the time you start your business, it'll take off, you know, once you're, you know, you finish grad school. And so, you know, I was intermittently in grad school and whatnot. And, but yeah, that's where I am today. That's how I ended up today. So I still have a university connection. I teach at Clayton State University as well, teaching a couple classes online, just to stay academically connected and into the research. But yeah, so that's what I do. Of course, Velvet Lips, my sexuality education company, helping people build up their sexual confidence, enhance their communication and their sex skills and seduction skills. And of course, the Sex Down South Conference, which I'm so happy you're wearing this shirt. I'm like, yeah. I was like, we're matching. So Sex Down South is going into our sixth year. You know, there's a lot of wishy-washiness going on right now, but we've definitely have said, hey, we're going to still continue to put it on. And if by July 31st, there is something that, you know, we still can't put it on or for whatever reason, we'll go ahead and transition the conference. But right now, I think people really need that connection. People really need to, you know, have that aspect of touch and be in person connect. I know I do. Maybe I'm just putting that on everybody else, but I know personally, as an extrovert, I am like dying for other people's hugs and kisses and love. So I really hope that, you know, Sex Down South can stick to its time. So
yeah, I really hope so too. And I was thinking a lot about that getting ready to interview you. Was really curious about the theme of this year's Sex Down South and also, you know, how you believe the quarantine, how the virus is affecting sexuality and touch and relationships, like what's going on for people around this.
Yeah, so I believe that people are being creative, you know. I think that there's a couple of things happening. One, I believe that people, yes, are being creative and finding newer outlets and embracing technology to, you know, employ, you know, sexual experiences. And then I also think that it's helping people to realize that online connections are real connections, right? I know there was a debate of like, are online friends your real friends, right? Like, you're dating that long distance lover, but do you really know them, you know? And so I really think now people are starting to believe like, hey, yes, these online connections, these online friendships we have are real friendships, and we need to treat them like they're, you know, real friendships. So yeah, I think those two things, I think, are the probably the most prominent things that are happening right now with the whole, you know, quarantine. So
yeah, I wonder if there's been a increase in sales of like the, I don't know what they're called, like distance touch toys, where you can like stimulate
Yeah, controlling vibrators with an app and all of that stuff. Oh yeah, I'm sure there is. I'm absolutely sure there is. My mom actually works for Amazon in California. And so she's just like, it's so busy. It's so busy with all sorts of stuff. But yeah, the sex toys are flying. I'm sure they're flying off individual websites as well, but I know they're flying off of Amazon's warehouse, you know, out of Amazon's warehouse too. So there's
that. Yeah, and I'm curious also, I probably won't be able to make it to Sex Down South this year, unfortunately, but I had a great time, beautiful time when I went the one time. And I'm curious, if things go well this year, how the quarantine might influence like the presenters and the toys that are available and things like that.
Yeah, so we do have some presenters that are like, I've decided just not to travel this year. We do want to make something happen with that and have possibly presenters, you know, do an online portion of the conference or have it strictly online, maybe one of the sections. So we're still kind of trying to figure all of those details out. But yeah, I know Tia and I are just very much, we are in-person people and we need people. So I think that is going to be the core, of course, of the conference. But we do definitely want to have some sort of online component. So we're thinking about how we are shifting too, as organizers, and how we can better accommodate and make the conference more accessible, you know, for those folks who aren't able to travel.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. I love what you guys are doing. It feels so healing. So for those of you who don't know the Sex Down South conference, definitely check that out. And we're going to give you all the URLs and website information at the end of the interview. So I love this question. I just feel like it's just a kind of a deep question. You can go wherever you want to with this. In your professional opinion, why is sex and sexuality still considered so taboo? Why?
Yeah, so I believe sex and sexuality is considered so taboo still, I think, because of the shame and stigma that we attach to it. You know, for instance, you know, parents who might shame their child for touching themselves, you know, instead of being like, hey, that's something, you know, we do in private, or like being like, no, 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 you know, so there's still like this shame and stigma that's attached to sexuality, even as a young child. And so I think that it grows up with us, right? And I also believe that there's lots of religions too that tend to stigmatize and shame sexuality, in whatever form it may be, right? And so it's very interesting. Oh my gosh, this thought just popped into my head, so random. But I was thinking about like Jesus, right? And I was thinking about Jesus and how like he's had all those, you know, Mary Magdalene and, you know, all the prostitutes that he was hanging around, and, you know, and I was like, was Jesus a pimp? You know, like, wait a minute, let's think about this here. But anyway, I just really think that religion has wanted you know, women in particular, to be pure and to, you know, even I'm also thinking about the Nation of Islam, right? Like Islamic religion is like, you need to be pure and this and that. And then when you get married to your husband, you need to be like a freak in the sheets. You need to like do whatever he wants you to do. And like, he's supposed to please you the same. But if you're used to being, you know, demure and pure and taught to be a pristine lady, you're not taught to be a freak in the bed. You're not taught how to please your husband. You're just thrown, you know, you're just kind of like, here you go. And so I think that can be a problem too. Just, I see the religious tension that tends to happen with people who want to be a little bit more free and liberated in their sexual life, but feel confined to the aspects of the religion that they've grown up with and that they've had a hard time adjusting to. So yeah, those are the sort of things that I think about when it comes to sex and sexuality and the shame and stigma that happens with people.
Yeah. Yeah. I always wonder if there's like, if it's the association of sex, because sex is so powerful. Our sexual energy is so, so powerful. And it's like, is that why it's taboo? Is it because religions wanted to control people, to control that power? Like what?
Yes, yeah. Totally. Because I believe, you know, our sexual energy, like you said, is extremely powerful. And when we're having sex, when we're embracing our sexual liberated selves, it comes out in all of the work that we do. And people, I wish more people would realize that, like, hey, this type of energy is amazing and explosive. And when you have sex, you feel on top of the world. You feel great. And especially if you've had an orgasm, you feel really great and amazing. Like, oh my gosh, I need to do this again. This is amazing. So you really feel energized and upbeat. And I just really, like you said, it is a powerful energy. And yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I would really love to see sexuality taken out of the box that it's been put in and seen like in a more integrated way in our society as just like a powerful force of nature that we all have access to that can mm-hmm. liberate us and help us feel good.
mm-hmm. Yes, exactly.
Oof. So I would love to ask you, what are some challenges that marginalized groups face around sexuality and relationships that may not be familiar to groups that have more privilege?
Well, I think part of that is accessibility and then also comfortability, right? Like I was just in a class the other day and I was the only Black person in that class, right? And we're talking about sex and sexuality and I'm just like feeling like I want to contribute, but I don't really necessarily feel comfortable. In particular, sometimes it's like white men who take up a lot of space in rooms. And like this person is like taking up a lot of virtual space, right? Like I'm just like, what the fuck, right? Now not only do I have to like think about that when I'm in person, but now I have to think about that virtually, like you're also taking up this space. And so I think when certain marginalized groups, I really feel need to be uplifted, but it also comes down to accessibility, right? So thinking about how are we going to get this information to people who can't hear or who can't see or, you know, folks, you know, it's just like, how do we make things more accessible for people in general? And I think this should be an everyday conversation. This should be something that should be happening all the time. And it's interesting because Sex Down South, like we really try to do our best, which when you sign up to register, it's like, please tell us your accessibility needs. And that is like, if you don't tell us what your needs are, then we can't support you because we're not automatically going to have these things because these things cost money, right? Like all of the accessibility things that we need are going to cost money. So I think that's important to also understand financial accessibility as well, you know? So when we are asking for volunteers, like, hey, you can contribute this amount of hours in order to attend for free, right? Like there are certain things that we need to make accessible for all sorts of people in all sorts of different situations. So yeah, I feel like I'm all like, did I answer your question?
It's all good. Yeah. I know, we're like flying through these. So just to kind of jump onto the back of that question, what can folks with more privilege, so like men, white women, do to create safer spaces around sexuality for marginalized groups?
Yeah, so I think really being invested in recruitment, right? So like really being invested in being like, hey, understanding who your audience is. So for instance, like that class that I was in, right? So if you know that I'm the only Black person in this class, maybe inviting another Black person or another two Black people to have scholarships to attend the class, right? Because I mean, I paid for the class, but it's like, you know, I have the privilege of paying for that class, and maybe folks who, you know, of color that don't have the privilege pay for that class. So maybe giving out scholarships. So that way I'm not feeling like, what the fuck am I, you know, in this all alone and not being able to, I mean, we connect to people who are the same race, same, you know, disability, same class, same, we connect. So I think it's okay to connect in all of those different ways, however we connect. But I also think it's important that, yes, we should be able to connect maybe in more than one way. So not just as sex educators, but as sex educators who are Black, who are poor, who are who have a disability, who have, you know, whatever the case may be, just making sure our affinities are more than just that one thing, I think is going to be important. And I also think like white people have money, you know, like you know, like recruiting your rich friends to contribute to, you know, certain things. I love like the white people who are associated with Sex Down South, because they're really just focused, and they're really just like, how can we help? And how can we recruit people to like bring you sponsorships or bring you scholarships? Or, you know, what are the things that we can do to help make sure that this is a good, safe space for everybody? And so I really do appreciate our connections and being able to get people to do that. So, you know, I think as educators or folks in general who are looking, I think white folks need to like call their friends, their connections, and, you know, help people get scholarships and funding, and then help recruit, you know, other folks of color, or look to, you know, other marginalized identities, not just folks of color, but look to recruiting, just saying like, hey, I see you. It was interesting. There was a post in the Sex Educators Union, and I think someone said like, oh, I'm a writer and I never can find stock photos of people of color or people in marginalized communities. And I was livid, because I was like, you are not looking hard enough. I was like, that period, point blank, you are not looking. I was like, here's a website, here's a website, here's a website. You are just not looking. You are not looking for Black disabled stock photo, right? You are not looking for queer Asian lesbians. I don't know what the fuck, you know, like you're just not looking. I really think it's important that people just sit there and don't give up. Like, oh, I can't see, just because, I don't know, Unsplash, you put in sex and these are the things that come up and it's, you know, thin bodies. That doesn't mean the images aren't out there. So just more effort, take more time and more effort to do it, you know?
That's really true. I have to vouch that like, it's really not that hard, because I have an ebook. It's called Endless Ecstasy, for those of you listening who might not know. And
nice.
And I've got lots of very diverse stock photos. So it's definitely possible. They're out there. You just have to type in.
Yeah. I just think that's fascinating. I'm like, you really just have to type it in. And then it comes up, because Google's amazing.
Yes. Yes. So yeah, let's go to another kind of taboo subject, if you don't mind. It seems like you mainly educate adults around sexuality. What are your opinions on really healthy sexual education for children?
So in the past, I actually started off educating youth. So that's where I originally started, back in San Francisco and Oakland. volunteering at a sexual minority youth center. And so I started actually talking to young folks from age 9, like queer youth age 9 to 25. And so I actually started talking to youth. And so I really think, of course, there's age-appropriate sex education that you can be using. I really think it's important in particular for young people to connect with their bodies and to their genitals. A lot of times we grow up, and I don't know what your caretakers like called like your genitals, right? But I know like my mom called it a kitty cat, right? Like, oh, you know, make sure you wash your kitty cat. And, you know, you grow up and you're like, wait, kitty cat? Like, hold up, right? And so just using appropriate names for genitals or, you know, and I think make sure your child or young person knows the appropriate name. And then if you would like to give it a nickname, please do. Like I tell adults to nickname their, you know, body parts. So I don't think it's wrong to nickname, but I do think if you don't have a connection to it or you're saying like down there, as if down there is scary, and not using a mirror, things like that. So I remember I spoke to a group in Atlanta called Just Us Girls, and they were, I think ages, I want to say like 11 to 19, and just really seeing them and having them back up. So when they say down there, I'm like, nope, we're not going to say down there. You're either going to say like my genitals, my vagina, my vulva, my clitoris, you're going to say whatever it is that you're feeling, you're not going to say down there. And I thought it was really important that I wasn't their mom or their adult that, you know, that was in charge somehow, but that I was coming in as a guest and speaking. And I think that helped me to have the authority to help them really sort of rid some of the shame and stigma that they were having about their bodies or thinking about their periods or the dirtiness and all of that stuff, really trying to normalize what their bodies are going through and what's happening. So, and even normalizing their emotions, right? You know, very hormonal when you're a teenager, right? Things are up and down and all around. And so really understanding like, hey, this is what healthy looks like in a relationship. And this is, you know, this is what healthy looks like. And this is how you can communicate or should communicate. So I really do think that talking to youth, and I think I really want to go back to talking to youth too. There's a website, I think, where you can sign up as an educator. And I'm like, parents, give me your children, you know, like give me your children, let me talk to them. And, you know, you can relax, you know, so I really, and it's hard for some parents, and I get it. I can, you know, I'm like, let me help you. Let me do that thing for you. Yeah. But yeah, I really do think it's important to talk to our youth and talk to them in an age-appropriate way that helps them to connect to their bodies, to their emotions, to their logic, to the benefits and consequences of being sexual and the sexual responsibility that tends to fall upon them, especially, you know, as a young person when they're going through puberty.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we have a really big responsibility to youth to, you know, find them and offer that sexual education because it really is sorely lacking in a lot of families. And I think, again, like for some reason, sexuality seems to be put into this box where people are like, oh, that's sex. That's like over there, not like, oh, this is sex. It's the foundation of like how we understand ourselves and our relationship to others.
Yeah. And it's like, yeah, how some people have gotten here, right? Some people right. have gotten here through sex, you know, like what the hell? Why are we so disconnected from it? Like, you know, that's just, it's almost appalling really, but you know.
Yeah. Yeah, we're trying. Yeah. we're making progress.
Exactly. Sexual yeah. liberators of the world. Mm-hmm.
Tell me more about your personal transmission. Like, what do you bring to people and what do you hope that people receive from the work that you do with sexuality and relationships?
I believe the thing that I really want to get out to the masses is number one, authenticity. And authenticity is when you also are aware of who you are as a person, what your desires are, how your body reacts to things, just really being aware and in tune to who you are. A lot of people, when they see me or approach me, they're just like, wow, you're just so free. I have one friend, she's like, you are very consistent. Everything you do is consistent. Like, whether your mom is here or your friends are here, you are the exact same person. And I'm like, yeah, I am. I don't change. I just refuse to change who I am for people or for some entity or for something that I, you know, if you don't appreciate who I am, then I don't need to be in your space. I don't need to be there. And so I really think it's important for people to be authentic because I find joy and happiness, and that's why I'm able to be free and do the things that I'm able to do. When I'm working at the university, this is what I look like. I don't look any different, you know? Like, I don't, you know, I don't change. I just think it's very important to be authentic. And I understand some people are private and want to keep, you know, their lives private. But I just believe that sharing our stories are a way to not only connect, but like normalize. We are all in this together. We only have this one life to live. And like, if you're gonna do it well, do it the way you want to do it. Because if you know, you get into, you know, you always hear those stories of people like get into their 60s and 70s, like, oh, I wish I could have done this in my past, or now I'm nearing the end of life and now I'm gonna be free. And it's like, but you could have been doing that all along. And so those lessons that we learn from older generations, I think is very, very important that we use those lessons now while we're younger so we can really fully take advantage of them and really live an authentic, full, and aware life. That is what I ultimately hope that people get from the work that I do and using that sexual energy to do it with, right? So being authentic, being aware, and using your sexual energy to help navigate all of those things.
Yeah, awesome. Hi, Wild Orgasmic Wisdom listeners. This is Kimberly Baudet, just taking a brief pause from the interview to let you know that you can now offer monthly support to the Wild Orgasmic Wisdom podcast. For as little as $3 a month, you can receive such perks as your name or business name in the credits of each YouTube version of the podcast, exclusive access to live monthly Q&A sessions with me, on-air thank yous using your name or business name, and even access to downloadable MP3 versions of all podcasts prior to their release. So if you're interested, please go to patreon.com/Sirona, and thank you so much for your support. What do you find are some of the most common issues that come up in relationships with couples? How can a couple really thrive inside of a relationship, you find?
So one issue that particularly comes up with my couples are sustaining a healthy sex life. So part of that is orgasms, right? Like closing the orgasm gap is really a problem. Some lovers in relationships or tend to be really focused on themselves instead of focused on their lovers. And so that can be a problem. So closing the orgasm gap, helping them to have fulfilling sexual lives. Another issue is like high desire versus low desire. That tends to happen with couples in general. And so understanding like where, you know, what's happening with the low desire. Is it low desire because of meds? Is it low desire because somebody's not helping around the house or the communication is bad or something shitty is going on in the relationship? Or, you know, is it low desire because, you know, maybe you're going through some emotional turmoil, grief, something, you know? So just really trying to understand what's happening with somebody who has, you know, low desire versus high desire. And then how can couples thrive? I think couples can thrive really through being invested in their sex life, right? Like putting the time, effort, and energy into their sex life. And part of that is being active, learning something new, getting a new toy, attending a lesson, listening to podcasts, right? Like doing all of these things, I think, are very helpful to engage in sexual dialogue that will help them with their sex life. So I have a sheet, erotic activity sheet, and I tell my couples, like, hey, fill it out, switch it, see which, you know, see what kind of things you'd be like, oh, I didn't know you were into this, or I didn't know that was going to turn you on. And really having a better understanding and awareness of what your lover wants or desires, or possibly, you know, think about a sexual situation that you can put them into so that they would be excited to be about, to be, you know, to be actively engaged in sexual. So I think it's so funny. I had one couple, I did like my seduction workshop, and I had one couple come up to me afterwards and they were like, we have done everything on your list. And I was like, oh my gosh, like I haven't even done everything on my list. And she was like, so what do we do now? And I was like, do it with other people or do it again? Like, repeat the list? I mean,
we need more.
I know, right? I'm like, there's a lot of things on there. So I'm like, repeat the list, you know, and repeating the list, I think is, it would be great too, because as we grow, our bodies change. Things we liked 10 years ago are not going to be the same things we like now, and vice versa. So just really thinking about our bodies and how we changed, I think, you know, we really should think about all the different and various erotic activities that there are out there that we can engage in, and that, you know, we should engage in for our own pleasure and the benefit of having a different and new sexual experience.
Yeah. And I think it's important for couples to understand that, you know, they don't have to go to an unsafe place in order to stretch the boundaries of what they experience as a couple. Like, it's not, you have to go out and have a threesome if you don't want to have a threesome, or you don't have to be tied up if you don't like to be tied up. But just to, it's nice to be able to have a sheet where you can actually say, oh yeah, I didn't think of that. We can try that. That would feel safe for me. That would feel safe for you.
Yeah, exactly. Like cooking in the nude or with it only an apron on or something, you know, something easy enough to where it's like, whoa, that's different, nuanced, or like, you know, in feeding them or something, you know. So just really thinking about all of the different aspects that can come with our sexuality. It's so funny. It's, cooking is on my paper. And, is on the sheet. And it's so funny because people are like, is this me like cooking? Like, yes, like actual cooking. Yep. Not takeout, not going to dinner, but cooking food. Yes.
So there's some ideas for you if you're home in quarantine with your partner. You've already got a few ideas of stuff you can try. So go for it. So yeah, again, singles in quarantine who are desiring intimacy, like you already talked about, like, you know, developing online relationships. Do you have any other tips for folks who might be feeling lonely at home and looking for connection?
Yeah. For folks who are feeling lonely, and I've had a lot of friends actually, talk to me about being lonely, right? And just being like, I never want to be in this situation again. I'm just going to try to get married as soon as possible. Or like I need to start like recruiting, having a lineup or something, you know, because it's just really lonely. And so for me, for singles who are in, you know, isolation, and I would say work on something in their house, work on a new project, flirting and getting on those apps. And, you know, flirting is always fun, you know, and if you're flirting with like five people at a time, I mean, you're staying busy, you know. I believe in taking lots of selfies, lots of sexy selfies, and not necessarily like, you know, if you don't want it to get out, like not showing, don't put your face in it or anything. You can take pictures of your body parts and be like, guess which body part this is, right? Like, there's so many ways to sort of flirt, you know, where if you're alone, like you're not necessarily feeling alone. And then if you have someone that you're interested in, you know, having phone sex, having webcam sex, having there's a couple websites where you can have anonymous, you know, have be virtual with an anonymous person. So really being able to explore your sexuality more. I really think like our book, you know, The Ultimate Guide to Seduction and Foreplay, I think we have a lot of prompts in here. And so I really think that really taking the time to, again, get aware, do those awareness exercises and be aware of just like, how do I feel when I'm feeling this or that? Or creating a user manual for yourself. Like, when I am sad, my lover needs to do A, B, and C, right? Or when I am happy, or when I am grieving, or, you know, when I'm mad, you know, leave me alone for an hour and then come kiss me on the forehead or whatever, you know, like really creating what you want for yourself and how you want to live your life, you know, with the next person or people that come along. So I just think really actively learning more about yourself, I think, is one of the best investments that single folks in isolation and can do for themselves.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And I love what you said about like creating the user manual. I think even for people in relationships, you know, creating that trust and that safety of like, what's important to you? Like, what makes you feel good? How do you like that I respond? And having that understanding, building that couple bubble of like, we both are working to help make each other happy.
Yeah, yeah. And I think it's easy because I forget shit like all the time. And, you know, if you write it down or I write it down, like then I can remember, because I know my wife, she's just like, you asked me that already, you know, and I'll be like, I don't remember, you know. So it's like, so I think it's really, really important for like, to write it down, to catalog it, to, you know, just to make sure that you have it so that you can just come back to it at any given point in time. Or, you know, a lot of people use their phones. I think, you know, they use your phone, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm picturing this like a manual hanging on the wall that we can just like go over and like,
yeah,
turn to page 15, yeah. Like, oh yeah, that thing.
Yeah. I forgot about it. Yeah. Totally.
Yeah. So Marla, I'd love to talk about your new book, actually, The Ultimate Guide to Seduction and Foreplay. Can you tell me more about that?
Yes. So Jess and I co-wrote The Ultimate Guide to Seduction and Foreplay, Techniques and Strategies for Mind-Blowing Sex. It's here. I'm so happy. And we have lots of different prompts. So we kind of start off with sort of the theoretical around what I call seduction learning styles and seduction learning approach. So we think about how our learning styles are seduction styles and using that as a framework along with our core erotic feelings and elevated erotic feelings and emotional seduction to sort of guide us into the more physical stuff. And then also understanding that foreplay is sex, right? And we really decenter penetration. And I think that's important to realize that sex comes in a lot of very different kinds of ways. And so I think a lot of people, when you think, oh, sex is, you know, penis, vagina, sex. And when I tell my couples and I'm like, well, did you have oral sex? They're like, yeah, well, it has sex in the title. Don't you think that's sex? And I'll be like, oh yeah, I guess so. Like, right. Like it's interesting in particular, like heteronormative decentering, I guess, penis, vagina, sex, or not used to using language in a way that is different. Honestly, I think what we do is for me, it feels like queering up language. where we are saying like, hey, these are the things you can do for penises. These are the things you can do for vulvas. These are things you can do for vaginas. These are things for people. These aren't just for women or aren't just for men. These are for people, because ultimately we always have a balance in our, I believe, in our masculine and feminine energies. And so there's, with that said, we talk about body parts, but I think ultimately we say like, hey, like these are the things that you can do with your body parts. These are the things you can do for seduction. You know, this is what it looks like. Here's step A, B, and C. You know, we give homework. We have lots of homework in here. You know, helping people to build up their sexual confidence, dirty talking, you know, all sorts of stuff. So I'm really, really proud of this book. And like, I'm really proud to have done it with Jess. She's an amazing co-writer. She's an amazing person, just and a really amazing friend, and just a wonderful gift in my life. So I'm very proud and appreciative of the book.
I really want to read that book. Where can I get a copy?
Yeah. You can get them on my website, velvetlipsexed.com/shop. I'm selling autographed copies on my website. You can get them on Amazon, of course. I could send the link for the Amazon. We did almost sell out our first week, but they're back in stock now at Amazon. And you can get them at your local feminist bookstore. I always say, whatever your local bookstore is, please, you know, your mom and pop, please support them and, you know, buy it from them. So yeah.
Fantastic. Okay, well, definitely check out The Ultimate Guide to Seduction and Foreplay. I'm really excited about that. I want to try the prompts.
Yes. Yes.
And just to wrap up, you're writing a chapter and co-editing a book called An Intersectional Approach to Sex Therapy, which is going to be released next year. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. So within therapy in general, there's not a whole lot of therapist manuals that are for people of color, you know, for folks in marginalized identities. So we really wanted to think about intersectionality and how that plays out with therapist, counselors, and educators. And so I'm co-editing the book with Dr. James Wadley, Mariana, and Reese. And basically it's a, what do you call that? Goodness gracious. Where lots of people contribute. There are lots of contributions. Oh. Anyway. I can't even think of the word. Sort of like an anthology. So we have a lot of people who are writing chapters around intersectional dynamics in different situations and the tools, the practical tools that we use to navigate these couples. And it's going to be published by Rutledge next year. So yeah, my chapter, it's called Queering Straight Black Relationships. And so navigating religious trauma, sexual identity tropes in the South. And so I'm like, talking about sort of that experience and then also giving people tools, what I use in my, you know, my coaching business, because I use a integrative strategy between, you know, sex therapy, somatic therapy, and comprehensive sex ed. So a combination of all of those to do my own, where I have my own curriculum. And so using the different strategies and what that means for folks who have identities that they are, you know, tied to, you know, or religious aspects or things that that shape the sexual tension in their relationships. So I'm really excited about that book. We have a lot of amazing authors, really great chapters so far. We're still writing them and everything. So it isn't due until the end of the year, but I'm super excited about that. And the title is, I think that's part of the title. Like the title is still kind of, you know, we're still playing with that a bit, but so far so good. I'm really excited about that one too.
Fantastic. Yeah. I can't wait to see that. Yeah. So, I'll just ask one more question. Is there anything else that feels alive for you right now during this time? Anything else you want to share with our audience?
Yeah, I think, you know, there's a lot of things that are sad, right, in this moment in time. A lot of grief that's happening with loss, and I'm definitely one of those, you know, positive, happy people. So I really would encourage people to take this time to sit with themselves, to be creative, to try, you know, try their best to learn more about themselves in this time, to slow down, to, you know, I don't know, dance, do things that are pleasurable, and really concentrate on the things that make them happy. What makes them happy? What are they grateful for? Every month I sort of have a new prompt. And so for the month of April, my prompt for every morning was, who am I going to talk to today? And I just put down a person that I'm going to have a conversation with this person, whether it's a friend or family member or colleague or whomever. Who am I going to talk to today? Who do I want to connect with today? Who am I grateful for today? And really taking the time to be with them and to share some good positive notes and to exchange energy. So that's what I hope for people during this time. So yeah.
Yeah. Beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing. Yeah.
Yeah. You're welcome.
I really appreciate you being here. And I wanted to let the audience know that Marla's website, Velvet Lips, is incredible. She has so many programs. You can learn how to do pretty much any sexual thing you can imagine. But you have a lot of tools, obviously, for love and relationships as well. There's a really broad spectrum. And I also wanted to say that if you, you know, are in the United States, and if you happen to live in the South, the Sex Down South Conference is incredible. Please volunteer. I volunteered and it was an amazing experience. I had a great time and I learned so much. So I would really encourage you to try that if you're not familiar with it. And Marla, could you share with us your social media information, where we can find you?
Of course, of course. So you can go on my website, which is velvetlipssexed.com. And then you can also find me on social media at velvetlipssexed, but sex without the E. I made this during Sesta Fosta time and I was like, I really just do not want to be shut down. So it would be annoying. So anyway, velvetlipssexed without the Ian Sex. And then the number one, Marla Stewart. You can find me on social media as well. And that's Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Medium. You can find Velvet Lips Sex Ed on Patreon if you want to support that way. I'm moving my blog, Your Sex Arsenal. So plenty of sex advice on medium.com/yoursexarsenal. So yeah. Thank you.
Awesome. Yeah, thank you so much. It was a pleasure to talk to you, and take care. Take good care of yourself.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me, and I appreciate it. I'm going to miss you this year.
Oh, I'm going to miss you too. I'll see you next year, hopefully.
Yes. Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.